Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
It's funny. So you heard yesterday that I guess Dan Rossini, Adam Schefter reported that the Bengals pick right off the bat, Rick, was, oh my God, there's an issue with the Wi-Fi. Kids, stop streaming the things you're streaming. Could you imagine if that happens Thursday night?
Yes, I could imagine it. I'm glad that they, that they did the mock draft and try to get out some of the potential issues. But I could imagine something like this happen.
Here's what I don't understand, Chris. And Chris, you're with us, right?
I'm with you guys.
Good. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Dave.
Like to hear it. Love to hear that. Could you imagine, do you think we're going to have some technical issues on Thursday night with this draft?
Well, I'm sure we're going to have some issues, but I'm glad the NFL has come off of their hardline approach, and they said that they've built in a mechanism where they're willing to pause the draft if a team is dealing with some connection issues. So I think that's the most important thing to keep in mind. This is unprecedented. It's never happened before. And so, yeah, there are going to be some hiccups. But the NFL is going to try to navigate this as best as possible, and the teams are just going to have to deal with it. But the one thing that should give everybody a little bit of comfort is that everybody's on an even playing field, so everybody is dealing with the same challenges.
Here's how I see it, Rick. If the WNBA – now, I didn't watch the WNBA draft, but I'm sure if there was a major issue, we would have heard about it. If the WNBA draft can go off without hiccup, without fail, all the picks get in, it's somewhat seamless – the NFL can't figure out a way to follow in those footsteps?
No, I think they can figure out a way to follow in those footsteps. I think as far as the number of people involved in making these NFL draft picks, you know, war room-wise, and the people that need to be involved, I think it's probably a lot bigger with the NFL teams than it is the WNBA. And how dare you not watch the WNBA draft, by the way?
You were locked in on the WNBA draft.
I watched it, yeah. I mean, you look at the New York Liberty. I mean, how many picks did they had?
All right, who was the second pick in the WNBA draft?
she was out of Oregon, Dave.
No, that was the first pick.
No, they both.
One and two were both Oregon?
Yeah.
Wow, that's some program they got up
there. Congratulations, Dave Rothenberg. You played yourself. You know Rico watches everything.
I still question how much WNBA draft he watched.
I'm telling you, I watched it. It was on the television. I'm not sitting there taking notes dialed in, but the fact that the New York Liberty had 1, 9, 12, 13, and 15. I mean, those are the picks they had. I was like, oh, this would be interesting.
Their GM is doing a hell of a job, huh?
Yeah, I mean, he's completely rebuilding the team, man.
Love it.
Listen.
Back to the conversation that we were actually having about the NFL draft. I understand you want to throw out the WNBA and that getting off to without any problems, any hiccups, but you're talking about 32 teams, not 12 teams. So, I mean, just with the sheer number of organizations you're dealing with, there are some more hurdles, there are some more challenges that are going to face the league.
I'm sure there are, but listen, if we can have our Zoom conferences and meetings, and I'm sure something will arise that there's going to be an issue, but I would think, I'm not expecting a disaster on Thursday, Chris. I'm expecting this to go somewhat seamlessly.
No, I'm not expecting a disaster in terms of the logistics of it, but what could be disastrous is what direction the local teams go in. Because if you listen to what Dave Gettleman had to say on that draft preview that they held for Giants ticket holders online yesterday, he's talking about somebody that has gold jacket potential with the fourth overall pick. And to me, that doesn't sound like an offensive lineman, Dave.
So you think he's going to go Simmons? You think that's the direction he's leaning in then?
I think Simmons is a real possibility. I mean, we all agree that the Giants probably should go in the direction of an offensive lineman. But, you know, when you start talking about, you know, the ceiling, the potential, I think Isaiah Simmons has more potential than any of the offensive tackles that are supposed to be at the top of this draft.
Yeah, at what point, though, do we start, you know, focusing on getting, you know, Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones their gold jackets? Like, how do we help facilitate them reaching their ceilings, reaching their potentials? I mean, that would be my other question. I mean, you're not going to do this all by yourself. I mean, Isaiah Simmons is an unbelievable talent. And, you know, depending on, you know, how your defensive coordinator wants to use him, I mean, he's special. There's no arguing that. But, I mean, let's not forget, I mean, what this Giants team needs now to get the best out of the draft picks that they've already made, they got to solidify the offensive line. They have to do it.
Yeah. And I mentioned this before. I'm not opposed to going first round, second round offensive line. You have to fix this offensive line. Listen, this is a team that's nowhere near anything. right there. They're over under in Vegas is 5.5. We sit here and we analyze what they are. The offensive line is not very good. They don't have great receivers, although they're passable enough. I mean, they have no guys to get to the quarterback. Their linebackers are the worst in the NFL. The secondary is mediocre at best. I mean, this is a team that needs everything. Everything. And you guys might be upset by it, Rick, but if they take Isaiah Simmons, am I going to freak out on Friday morning? No, I'm not going to, but I think to me it's clear cut. I'm going to try to move back, and I'm going to try to move back, and then I'm going to take the best offensive lineman available.
I think that's what he'd like to do. I think the fact that, you know, that Justin Herbert report surfaced yesterday, I think it's clear that Dave Gettleman would like to move back. Who knows if that's going to be an option or not? I mean, with what's going on with Tua and his health status, and then, you know, how you feel about Justin Herbert. I mean, you tell me which team is moving up to take the quarterback. And if you're not going to move, I mean, if you're moving up, why wouldn't you just move to three?
Nah, that's what I would do. I mean, that's essentially where the draft starts, because if you're the Detroit Lions, if you're not taking a quarterback, the player that you're looking at taking, you can wait, you know, a couple of picks in order to pull the trigger on that deal. You don't have to take them at three. You could trade back for a team that does want to have their choice between Tua and Justin Herbert and potentially Jordan Love. And you can acquire a couple extra picks. But, I mean, you got to have another team that's willing to do the dance. And right now it doesn't feel like the Miami Dolphins nor the Los Angeles Chargers are in that much of a hurry to try to get up 2-3. Now we'll see what happens.
And to that point, I saw Lewis Riddick. They did a draft special during the afternoon yesterday on ESPN, and Lewis Riddick was on, and he was asked about moving up. He's like, there's no way I'd move up for one of these quarterbacks. Now, again, we don't know what the mindset is of the specific teams, but he said Dolphins, Chargers, Jaguars, any of these teams. He said, there's no way that I would move up for Tua or for Herbert. He said, I don't think they're that caliber of quarterback. So,
No, he didn't say that about Tua. He said the injury concerns is what would keep him from moving up for Tua. He said with Justin Herbert, he doesn't believe he belongs in that position.
Right. So he said he would. There's no way he would consider moving up for either of these quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Right. So and he didn't sound like he loves Herbert at all. Which is, I mean, there's just polarizing views, and you get that all the time, Rick. Right? You get some guys that love him. Mike Tannenbaum's going to join us at. Now this is dicey, by the way. I saw this and I thought you might be upset. Mike Tannenbaum's going to join us at 12:30 today.
I have no problem with that. I signed off on that.
So you're going to punt on observations then?
Yeah, I love Mike T. Whenever he wants to come on the show, I'm more than happy to, you know, facilitate that. I got to give up a segment. I give up a segment. What do I? Okay. I mean, this is what we do here. We're flexible.
Okay. I mean, it is draft week, so to give that up is very kind of you. But you know, still the 12:30 observations.
Dave, let me explain something to you. What I mean, and you should know this by now. We've been doing the show long enough. You start talking NFL draft. What is the one thing that annoys me more than anything with GMs in the NFL draft, especially GMs that just so happen to work for the New York teams? I'll tell you, because you're not going to be able to guess it. It's the lack of flexibility. It's like their ability to, like Jerry Reese, on the fly, make a decision where, hey, I got to pivot. I got to, you know, move up to get my player. I got to move back, whatever I can do. Same thing with Dave Gettleman. We're sitting here talking about him trading back. He's never done it before. Never.
No.
So this is going to be the year when all of a sudden you're doing a virtual draft?
He's throwing signs out there that this is the year he'd like to potentially do that. I don't know if he's going to be able to, Chris, but he's certainly sending the signals that he'd like to.
No, it doesn't feel like he's going to be able to, because there's nobody that wants to get up in order to get somebody within that top five. So if you don't have a team that's willing to give you fair value for the fourth overall pick, you can't do it. And if you're forced to stay in that slot, what direction are you going to go? Are you going to lean toward the offensive lineman, or are you going to lean toward the defensive player that seems to have more upside? I mean, you know, Dave Gettleman is talking about he wants somebody that has gold jacket potential. To me, it should be about finding somebody that also has a really high floor, somebody that you can plug and play for the next decade. And I would look at Wills or I would look at Wirfs, because it helps me in terms of being able to put a solid offensive line in front of my franchise quarterback and then take advantage of a running back who I used the second overall pick on 3 years ago.
And it feels like a natural transition, doesn't it, though? I mean, if you end up taking Wills or Wirfs. Now, the question about Wirfs, he's a super athlete, but is he more of a guard than a tackle? I mean, that's a question you're going to have to ask yourself. But say it's just Wills, for example. If all of a sudden now you bring in Wills, you plug him in at right tackle, you have Solder play left tackle, and then just natural progression when you're done with Solder, now all of a sudden you can move Wills over to left tackle. I mean, that seems like, you know, moving forward, that would be the smart play.
And when you're done with Solder, meaning after this upcoming season.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly
cause,
right.
Because
yeah.
he's on his way out. So you do have to have some urgency about finding a tackle, and you need somebody that can play relatively early, which is why I wouldn't wait to the second round for an Ezra Cleveland or an Austin Jackson. So I really feel like Dave Gettleman, this is one of those that you can't get too cute with. And I know he said it in a different way when he made that statement, but this is one of those that you can't overthink. Go ahead and take the left tackle, the guy that you can have protecting the blind side for your quarterback for the next decade, and call it a win.
So Giants take Tristan Wirfs, fourth overall, and your reaction on Friday is?
I'm ecstatic, Dave, because you addressed an area of need that's going to make Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley exponentially better. Giants and that's what you're looking for. That's what you want. In the fourth overall pick, can he make the guys that I have on my team better? The answer to that question is absolutely, unequivocally, yes.
All right, so you're happy with Wirfs. How about Jedrick Wills, fourth overall, Friday? Your reaction is?
Same reaction.
Mekhi Becton.
Not as bullish, but I mean, again, he's got the potential to be a starter for the next decade. So
Andrew Thomas.
Dave, listen, any of the offensive linemen I would be okay with at the fourth overall pick. I like a couple of them better than the other two, but I mean, listen, I'm not the one that's watching all of the film on all of these guys. I didn't watch every single game that Mekhi Becton played. I didn't watch every single game that Tristan Wirfs played, but I did watch Tristan Wirfs in the Holiday Bowl against USC, and he dominated. So, I mean, when you get a chance to actually watch these guys play and you see them jump off the page in terms of being able to protect their quarterback and set a hard edge both in the run game and the passing game, that's what you want. Tristan Wirfs has traits that translate well to the NFL game. That's what you want from an offensive lineman.
Yeah, see, I don't think you can go wrong. I mean, to Chris's point, I mean, go back to when the Giants drafted Saquon Barkley, right? And Saquon Barkley, gold jacket, full bloom love, loved him. Love Saquon Barkley.
Yep.
And you know what? Yeah, maybe he ends up in the Hall of Fame. But when you look at that draft, I mean, you guys correct me if I'm wrong. The player for me that stands out, that's had the most success early on in his career and kind of has that trajectory as could be a Hall of Famer.
You're going to say Quentin Nelson.
It was the offensive lineman.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a sexy pick. But as far as longevity, as far as, you know, immediate impact on what you need right now, as opposed to on the defensive side of the ball, we have so many holes and you're missing so many pieces. So as good as Isaiah Simmons is, I mean, let's not forget on Clemson's defense, I mean, he was surrounded by a lot of talent. He's not going to have nearly as much talent for the first couple of years playing for the Giants.
No, he's not. Yeah, and you're going to have to change the scheme if you want him to be one of your linebackers. You're not going to be able to run the odd front scheme that you've been running. You're going to have to change over to a 4-3, which is fine, which is fine. I mean, you saw the Chicago Bears, what they built around Brian Urlacher. That worked out for them. You got a Hall of Fame player in that situation. Same thing with the Tampa Bay Bucks when they drafted Derek Brooks. So, I mean, it's a situation where it's okay if that's the direction that you want to go, but you realize if you draft Isaiah Simmons, that is going to be a multi-year process in terms of filling out that defensive unit. If you draft an offensive tackle with the fourth overall pick, your offense is ready to roll day one in 2020.
Yeah, especially if all of a sudden you turn around now too and take a center. I mean, if all of a sudden you get a tackle and a center in this draft, yeah, I mean, that's transformative.
But Rick, even if four of the five offensive linemen that you have are plus players, that's an offensive line that you can win with. I mean, if you're talking about the only weak spot on the Giants offensive line being the center position, I'm okay with that.
I think every Giants fan would be okay with that. Hey, here's the one team, though. I would say, I was thinking about this last night. I actually had a good conversation, did a little house party last night, going back and forth with a couple buddies and then some people that actually work in the NFL.
Wait, a virtual house party?
Yeah, house partied it up a little bit.
Like a Zoom kind of get-together?
Yeah, the house party. Same thing. Yeah,
I wasn't invited to the house party.
I didn't know you partake in the house
I
party.
I love the house party.
All right, the next house party I have, you'll be invited. I didn't even realize.
Chris, were you invited?
I was not, David.
I'm going to be honest. It was spur of the moment. It was accidental. How a house party works, you go in, just check, see what's going on, and then all of a sudden I didn't realize just by checking they could bring me into it. So I got sucked in. I mean, I was on the toilet, too. I'll be completely honest. I was in the dark on the toilet. But it ended up turning out to be a really good conversation. So we're going back and forth, and a couple things came out of the conversation, which were, I think, pretty interesting and topical. The one team, and Chris, I'm going to ask you this question. The one team that no one's really talking about that I feel like may be a factor in trading up to get one of these quarterbacks possibly. What about the Raiders? I mean, doesn't John Gruden at some point want to pick his own quarterback?
You would think, but I don't think they have to be in a hurry. They got a quarterback at a relatively inexpensive price. So I just, it sure seems like they could do it. They got two picks, what, 12 and 19, I think it is. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you have the ammunition if they would want to get up. I just don't know that they have a conviction on any of these guys that they feel like they got to get into the top 10, top five.
Yeah, I just think he's got two first round picks. They have two first round picks this year. They don't have two next year. I don't know. Just
but they
like
got to come. They got to come away with a corner and a wide receiver. And
no,
they're
I don't
in a perfect
disagree
position
with you.
To be able to do both.
But how sexy would that be? I mean, you bring in like they rushed to sign Marcus Mariota, you know, Hawaiian kid. You draft Tua, have them work. You know what I mean? Have them work together. It seemed like a nice fit. That was the one thing. Second thing is this: with so much uncertainty going on with the pandemic, you know, contingency plans. Is the NFL going to start on time? Are there going to be, you know, fans in the stands? What's the schedule going to look like? Is it going to be condensed? More importantly, because we're right around the draft right now, is what's going to happen with the college season? So let's just say, for example, colleges don't open on time. Students aren't back. So they're not going to just blatantly tell everyone that it's all about money. So then now all of a sudden football doesn't start. They play in the spring.
Right.
How does that affect next year's draft?
They move it back.
No, I know they move it back, but how does that affect, like, how much do you value those draft picks in next year's draft? If all of a sudden now you got kids that, like, what does Trevor Lawrence do? Is he going to play spring football or is he going to sit out? Like, how are you going to do that? Are you going to risk, I mean, if you're Trevor Lawrence, are you going to risk getting hurt when you're a couple months away from being the first overall pick?
I mean, does it really change it whether the season is played in the fall or the spring?
Well, I just think as far as you getting your draft board, scouting, like all that, it's just that all of a sudden now you're trying to condense that. I mean,
I think teams would be in a position where they'd have a lot more information if the college season was played next spring than they would on any of the players coming out this year.
No, I'm not saying I necessarily disagree with you. I just think if all of a sudden now you're going to condense the season where it's going to be less college games, less time in between the football playoff and when you're going to have your draft.
Yeah.
So you're not going to have, when does the combine happen? I just don't know.
All of that stuff does get jumbled up. You're absolutely right. But the one thing I can say is now you have the ability to send your coaches to these actual games that these kids are playing in because you're playing the NFL season in fall. So your coaches can get an up-close look at these guys in real-life competition versus watching them in the underwear Olympics. So, I mean, I guess there's give and take with both. For me, selfishly, as a football fan, I would love to have the NFL in the fall and college football in the spring. But, I mean, we'll see how that all plays out. But there are a lot of challenges for teams in trying to nail this year's draft, more so than any other draft, just based on the offseason or lack thereof that we've been able to have in the pre-draft process, not really having a lot of information on these kids, not being able to sit down in person with these kids. I think that's going to make a huge difference for some organizations.
Yeah, I just thought with like the level of uncertainty, like we're not knowing what college football is going to look like, not knowing what the NFL is going to look like, and knowing how deep this draft is, if maybe you prioritize this year's draft more than you normally would, just because you don't know really what the landscape's going to look like moving forward.
I'm not saying you're wrong, but think about how dangerous that is when you don't have a lot of information on these players. I mean, if you're Zach Taylor or you're Matt Patricia, I mean, you probably have a little more insight than most of the coaches just because you coached the Senior Bowl, so you got a chance to see those guys for a week up close and personal. But, I mean, for a lot of these teams, I mean, outside of their impressions that they got at the combine, they don't have a lot of information. They don't have a lot of touch points on the guys that they're going to be responsible for drafting this weekend. And that's a scary proposition. And if, like you said, you wait this year's draft more than you would next year, I mean, that could put teams in a very compromising position.
Well, it's just going to accentuate who's good at their job and who's not, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Like the teams that are good at drafting. Here's the other thing, though, too, Chris, to take into account, and Dave, is that, you know, maybe, again, I mean, when this whole thing started, we said, you know, gives you a chance now because of the circumstances to maybe, you know, change some things that you normally wouldn't change. Now because all these GMs are stuck at home just watching game tape, maybe it actually helps them a little bit. So they're not so focused on all the extra stuff. They're more focused on what they see on tape.
Mm.
Yeah, they got to trust the tape, which is never a bad place to start when you're trying to evaluate a football player. This is not about being the best athlete in the world. It's about being a guy that can step in between the white lines and be productive. if you draft off of the tape, more often than not, you're going to give yourself a chance to find a good football player. But a lot of teams get in their own way because they look at all of these other things surrounding the prospect. And whether you like a guy or whether you don't like a guy, you can probably make a case for both sides of it. And so what the tape does is give you an opportunity to be objective about a given prospect.
Do you think that GMs are given a longer leash? Like, if and God, I hope this doesn't happen, but if Judge and Gettleman, you know, with all the hoops that they have to jump through and the strange draft and short, you know, off season and maybe no extended training camp and all these things and the season being a mess, do you think if the Giants aren't a bad team again, or not even the Giants, like a team just happens to have a really bad season and that GM or coach is on the hot seat, that the ownership might say, yeah, but it was such a strange time that we'll give him a little bit more leash than we normally would, Rick?
Yeah, I think probably to a certain degree. I mean, if your mind is kind of already made up, you know, that this is probably going to be the last year for whoever it is, your GM or your coach, then it probably doesn't matter. But I mean, if you're in a situation where you go through the draft, you make some good picks, and just because of, you know, maybe it's, you know, you got a young quarterback, new coaching staff, or whatever it ends up being, you don't have a very good season. I mean, this is supposed to be, you know, Dave Gettleman's got to improve his batting average.
Right.
But, I mean, forget the draft. Like, moving past the draft, you would expect him not to screw up the fourth overall pick. But because it is a new offensive system, a new defensive system, you have a head coach that's never done it before, and now you have, you know, no offseason program and then maybe a condensed training camp. Yeah, maybe you do say, you know what, it's not fair to Dave Gettleman to judge him on this season.
It ain't about being fair. It's about being able to produce results, and everybody has to deal with the same set of circumstances. So, I mean, for me, I don't think it really all that much matters. If this team shows signs that they're trending in the right direction, Dave Gettleman will get, you know, another year to be the general manager. If they floundered like they have in his first 2 years as the GM, then he probably won't have a fourth season with the New York Football Giants. So I don't think this offseason changes how you're going to evaluate Dave Gettleman one bit.
I don't know how you could feel good about it, to be honest. And I'm not trying to be negative. I mean, in Vegas, the over-under is 5.5. We look at the schedule, we look at their opponents, and we say, yeah, you know, 5 wins, maybe 6, if things go really well, 7. Like, unless the Giants do something that I'm completely not anticipating, I don't know how this is going to be a really good year for them, Chris.
I don't see it either, Dave. But, I mean, listen, we never know. There's a reason why we play the games. But you also have to look at, okay, how can we get this team back on track? And to me, that means forming an identity around Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones. And if you're going to do that, then you got to support those guys by having a really good offensive line in front of them. And you got an opportunity to make huge strides in that regard on Thursday night.
Yeah, this is a huge draft for the Giants. I mean, but every draft is a huge draft. You pick second, you know, you do well. But the thing that's a little frustrating to me, Rick, is Barkley's good. Like, Barkley's a terrific player. So if I said, did you hit on that or not? You'd say, yeah, they hit on that pick. Jones is good. We laughed at Jones. We mocked it. I was angry. Everybody was frustrated. But his rookie season, he was really good. So you hit on 2. You hit on 6. You're imagining you're still going to hit on 4. And you're still sitting here with a team that can't get out of its own way.
Yeah, because, I mean, you had – this is not something that just happened overnight. I mean, how many shows did we spend banging on Jerry Reese and how bad he did in the draft? I mean, it's a salary cap sport. And you made some bad decisions. You made some awful draft picks. You doubled down on Eli Manning, which was a mistake and set you back. But I think, I mean, to your point, I mean, Saquon Barkley had a really good rookie year. Was good in his second year, but, you know, battling the injury and everything else.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean – you got laughed at for Daniel Jones at 6, and now, I mean, between Gettleman and Shermer just rubbing it in your face all season last year, I mean, Daniel Jones looks like the real deal. So, I mean, here's the thing. If you're Dave Gettleman and you're truly concerned that if you don't show improvement this season under these circumstances that you're going to get fired, then for me, my mindset would be, who can I plug in immediately that's going to have instant impact on me winning or losing football games? Or
yes,
who's going to accentuate my biggest, like, let's be honest, Dave Gettleman's biggest bargaining chip with ownership as far as keeping his job is the success of Daniel Jones. So if that means all of a sudden you draft a tackle with the 4th overall pick and your quarterback's protected, and let's not forget, if Daniel Jones only played 12 games, I mean, had he played a full season, he would have set the rookie touchdown record. That would have happened.
Yes.
So again, now all of a sudden, if I solidify the offensive line and now, you know, Daniel Jones takes that huge step in year 2, Maybe it doesn't equate to wins because our defense still has a lot of problems. I mean, how do you get rid of? How would you get rid of Dave Gettleman at that point?
You probably couldn't, but I have a hard time believing that Daniel Jones will play up to that level, and the Giants wouldn't be able to have some correlation with the amount of wins that they get in 2020. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you have a really good offense led by a young, emerging quarterback, like, your team is going to have some wins to show for it. So I feel like for the overall program that you're building, the offensive tackle makes a lot more sense just because of the two first-round picks that you made in the two drafts prior. So for a lot of different reasons, offensive tackle makes the most sense at four. Now, will they do it? Who knows? We've sat here and said that Dave Gettleman should do one thing, and he's done another in both drafts that he's overseen for Big Blue. So there's no telling what kind of curveball that he could throw Giants fans on Thursday night. But as we sit here today, I don't see how they go in any direction other than offensive tackle.
All right. So here's what we have on the show today. All right. Sal Powell's going to join us 10:30. Mike Tenenbaum at 12:30. So it's a good day of guests coming up. We're going to get into the NFL. We'll get more into the Last Dance documentary. Rick, have you happened to hear who's on Bart and Han at 2 o'clock today?
I did.
Are you a little jealous about that?
I'm a little bit jealous, but I understand. I mean, Bart's a former Jet. He probably, cashed in a favor or two.
Sure he did. The Jet GM, Joe Douglas, will be on the show.
Well, here's what I will say, though, Dave. Yes. I mean, he does, as a parting gift, that show does deserve Joe Douglas after the absolute beating, annihilation. I'll go as far as say annihilation that Bart Scott had against one Chris Canty from our show when they went at it.
I actually heard, and this is genuine, that it was embarrassing, that Chris took him to the woodshed on Friday.
Oh, time it was over, I mean, he had completely flipped Bart. Bart was agreeing with him, and they were so embarrassed they had to go to commercial. It was like J-Dub was in Allen's ear going, okay, this is bad.
Just break.
This is the commercial. Just break.
We're 5 minutes away from break. Just break. We'll find commercials. We're on the phone with sponsors now. Just break.
Y'all are crazy.
Did you feel like when you were done, did you flex? Did you feel like, yeah, I got him?
No, I owed Bart one because he embarrassed me the last time I went on their show, so I owed him one.
And you gave it to him, didn't you?
I hung on the rim a little bit.
There you go.
Yeah, just a little.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. What can you do? Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, your mouth. Stay home when you're sick. Cover your cough or your sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters at 98.7 ESPN New York. And Sal Powell's going to join us in just a moment. He's covering the Giants, the Jets, the Eagles, and the Ravens, Chris Canty.
So essentially anything on I-95 in the Northeast.
That's right. Anything you can drive to within three and a half hours, Sal Powell is he's got it covered. He does such a good job, doesn't he?
He does a phenomenal job. I love watching him on NFL Matchup on Sunday mornings with Greg Cosell. I think those two do a better job of breaking down X's and O's on TV than anybody else in the business.
All right, so let's bring him in, Sal Powell, and needs no introduction. Everybody knows the great work that he does. Sal, we appreciate a couple minutes here on 98.7 ESPN. Let's start with this. The report yesterday, the Giants are doing their due diligence with Justin Herbert and really looking into him. Is that a smokescreen? Is it, hey, look at the four pick, you want to come get it? What was that from the Giants?
Well, before I answer your question, let me just say I'd like to express my condolences and prayers to you and your family for your loss. You've been a great friend to me for so many years. When I heard about it, I was truly shocked, and we are very, very sorry. And, we lit a candle at St. John's Church in Collingswood for you and want to make sure that you're in our thoughts and prayers.
Wow. Well, that's really sweet and really kind, and you've been a great friend over the years as well. So I appreciate that. I thank you, and your thoughts are certainly appreciated from me and my entire family. So thanks, Sal.
So let's get on to the draft. I think the interesting thing is this. I think the Giants at the top of the draft are trying to do everything they possibly can to entertain offers. And they want to know everything about these players that could go in the top 10. And I think what you see Joe Judge and Dave Gettleman doing in partnership, and I have tremendous respect for Joe Judge, tremendous. I've known him for years. I've watched his work. This guy's going to be a great head coach. Great. And what I think they're doing, and what he's learned from Bill Belichick, is you got to make sure you know the players that all the teams are interested in the top 10. And because things are truncated and abbreviated and there hasn't been the one-on-one contact, there's no harm at all in FaceTiming these players and talking to them and finding out what, why people are interested in what makes them so special. Because when you get on the other line with the San Diego Chargers, the Miami Dolphins, you say, you know, we talked to this young man, and here's what we think he's worth. Here's what we think he's all about. And we want to be compensated properly because we know this is a special guy. This is what we found out about him. And this is the reasons why we think he's special and valuable to any football team. And the bottom line is, though, you know, and I look at the Giants and the Jets, and I've covered them for 25 years. Chris knows that. I don't think they're playing in the modern NFL right now. The film study that you do on both of those football teams, I think both of them are missing the boat of what's going on in the league. The one thing that we do on the matchup show that Greg Cosell and Matt Bowen and before that Louis Riddick and Ron Jaworski and Merrill Hodges, you look at the trends in the league. The NFL, and Chris will tell you this, the NFL is a copycat league. What's working, other teams will copy. So what's working in the NFL right now? The short, quick passing game is working in the NFL. What you're seeing is those teams that have quarterbacks who drop back quickly, either in run-pass option as dual-threat quarterbacks or in quick drop sets like Brady off a quick play action, where the ball gets out of their hands in 2.5 seconds or less, that makes your offensive line look really, really good. That sends offensive linemen to the Pro Bowl because you're not getting touched because the ball's coming out. And so if I were Dave Gettleman or Joe Judge or Joe Douglas or Adam Gase, I would find me a quick twitch wide receiver who could get open for Daniel Jones or Sam Darnold quickly, beat press man coverage. And Chris, I know you're looking at film study. What are teams doing as an antidote to this trend in the NFL? They're playing single high press man coverage because they know the quarterback wants to get the ball out of their hands quickly. And if I were Dave Gettleman, I'd try to move down a few slots, and then I'd snatch a wide receiver. I'd snatch Jerry Jeudy and make everybody forget about OBJ because I think this guy has what it takes to be an NFL receiver right away.
All right, Sal, in saying that, and I think that's what Dave Gettleman would like to do is move back and acquire some more picks. I mean, Does it, in your opinion, from what you've heard, does it have to be a team jumping up to take a quarterback, or are there any teams that you've heard that are interested in, you know, one of these stud defensive players, either Okuda or Isaiah Simmons, that would jump up?
Right. In my view, based on what I've seen and heard, the only guy who's worth jumping up to get is Chase Young. He's a blue-chip prospect who is going to be a good to great. And, you know, you don't want to give out those accolades too routinely or too easily, but he's going to be a good to great edge rusher in the National Football League. Size, speed, strength, and you look at him on film. I don't watch too many Ohio State games, but when you watch him on tape, he's got to wanna. He's got the fire in his gut. He wants to beat you all the time. He's got a lot of Bosa in him. And I think he is a guy worth going up and getting. I'm not sure Isaiah Simmons is. Isaiah Simmons is very, very valuable in this draft. He's also one of my five blue-chip players because in the NFL right now, defensive coordinators are looking for what I call positionless players that play every position, that can defend on all three levels of the defense. Simmons can rush the quarterback. He can go sideline to sideline and chase down a running back as a linebacker. He can play safety. He can line up against a tight end in the slot and disrupt the short passing game. If Simmons is there at four, let me tell you this right now. If Gettleman doesn't drop out of four, doesn't get what he wants, and Simmons is there, and he takes an offensive lineman, That would be a huge mistake. Huge. Simmons will change the aperture of the Giants' defense overnight.
Wow, Sal. I mean, you're blowing my mind with that one. Let me ask you a question, Sal.
Bill Parcells
used to always say, I'm not drafting a guy unless he reminds me of a guy that I've had success with. And a lot of people are having a hard time identifying what Isaiah Simmons will be. We had Mike Tannenbaum on a show a couple of weeks ago. He said that Simmons is going to be like Derwin James or Minkah Fitzpatrick. I think Simmons is more in the mold of a Brian Urlacher or a Derrick Brooks, an off-the-ball linebacker in a 43. What do you think Isaiah Simmons' position is in a base defense in the NFL?
In a base defense in the NFL, I think he's the elephant. I think he's going to roam around, and the quarterback's going to get to the line of scrimmage, Chris, and he's going to say, where is this dude? He's a bad man. I got to find him because he's going to make my afternoon rough.
Wow, so that's kind of like a Troy Polamalu rover position?
Yeah, but Troy Polamalu with a little Charles Haley, you know, sprinkled in.
Woo! Okay. All right.
I mean, you look at him with the size and speed that he has and the ferociousness, I think he can do everything on all three levels of the defense. I think you put him on the football field and say, okay, where are we lining this guy up based on down and distance now? How can he hurt the quarterback?
Sal, let me ask you this question. Is he a good enough edge rusher to consistently win one-on-ones against offensive tackles?
Yep, that's a big question mark. Sure. But you don't necessarily have to do that. You put him in a multiple situational defense like Belichick's or Rex Ryan's, and you just say, okay, this is where he's lining up here. This is what he's reading. He's going after the football wherever it is.
Got it.
I think he's one of my five blue chippers, Chris. I really do. But I'm not sure if I'm devoting that much draft capital to go up and get him because there are, you know, you have to have the right coach and the right mindset and the right approach to say, I can do a lot of stuff with this guy. I mean, if I'm Matt Patricia, there's no way I'm passing on him for a press corner. No way. No way.
Sal Powell with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So, Sal, I know we want to focus on draft, and I want to as well, but you said something which I thought was so interesting. You love Joe Judge, and there's a lot of people that are uncertain or don't like the fact that he's not referring to players and starters by name right off the bat. What is it, and we all respect your opinion, that you love so much about this new head coach?
Buttoned up. Totally buttoned up. See, the thing about what has made the Parcells tree so successful is very simple. It came right out of West Point. You know, you have to look at the coaching tree of where Bill Parcells came out of. He came out of the U.S. Air Force Academy in West Point. And that's what he always – Bill Belichick's father coached in Annapolis. These guys are buttoned up. And what do I mean by buttoned up? They have a contingency plan for the contingency plan. So if this happens, or that happens, we know what we have to do. That was the great thing. All you got to do is go back and look at how Patricia and Belichick coached up Malcolm Butler in that Super Bowl against Seattle, where he made that pick at the end of the game. And you go back and you look at it, and I wrote about it in my book, How Football Explains America, how they coached up that defense and didn't use it until that particular play in that critical moment, and how Belichick looked at Pete Carroll on the other sideline, and everybody on the broadcast was saying, why doesn't Belichick call a timeout? Because he already had a plan in place. And I think Judge comes right out of that DNA.
Yes, Alan, in kind of touching on what you mentioned about Joe Judge, and I think, I mean, to Dave's point, I mean, maybe rub some people a little bit the wrong way just because you didn't understand him and, you know, his first time doing it wouldn't say Daniel Jones' name and everything else. I mean, how much do you think, I mean, as good as you think he'll be, and for Dave's sake, I hope you're right because he needs it, how much now with no OTAs and maybe a condensed training camp, how much behind the eight ball will someone like Joe Judge be this year?
Well, I think someone like Joe Judge could get over it, but I do think it will be challenging. Let's not try to undersell it. I mean, there's a reason why you have OTAs or they wouldn't have them. There's a reason why you have training camps. There's a reason why you have exhibition games or they wouldn't have them. You know, it's not easy to get, 53 guys as a well-oiled machine to play a grueling marathon 17-game schedule. It's a war of attrition. It's a war of adaptability. So taking that all away or trying to do it virtually over the phone or over your laptop is going to be a huge challenge. But here's something that I have learned about professional athletes covering them my entire life, and something that I learned being in the military, is that people who want to get ahead and get the job done or to be the most successful in their profession, they're the ones that adapt. They're the ones that figure out a way to get things done. You know, Keith Hernandez, I have Keith Hernandez's first autobiography, and there's a great line in it that I've been quoting to my kids all the time. It's like, you know, life is about baseball. If you don't adjust, you die. And, you know, that I think that has never been more true in professional sports specifically. This is a time where everybody needs to adjust their preparation, their training, their execution of what they do. And it will be an historic level of challenge for these people, but I think it'll be difficult for sure, 100%. Who knows if we will have much of a training camp? We have no idea. I was just on a phone with a very prominent NFL executive before I came on with you guys, and we were talking about the Hall of Fame game. The Hall of Fame game is scheduled to be played 90 days from now. And we both said to each other, we don't know where we're going to be in 90 days. You know, 60 days ago, there were hundreds of NFL people gathered for the NFL Combine in February in Indianapolis, and nobody was talking about this. So where are we going to be in 90 days? Nobody knows.
Sal, I know you talked about the evolution of NFL offenses and teams having success with the short passing game. In your opinion, how much of that has to do with the scarcity of offensive linemen?
Well, offensive line play has suffered, right, Chris? Because you don't hit as much. There isn't as much contact. It's hard to develop chemistry in a game like football when you're not hitting one another. That we can. That's a truism, because the game is about physical contact. So offensive line play, if you talk to coaches, and I do all the time, especially assistant coaches, and assistant coaches will always bemoan the fact that they're just not getting enough work done. That's the nature of the business. But it's pretty clear when you watch it on tape, it's the first thing that goes. So there's no question that because we're almost playing flag football because of the rules and because of the practices, that it's all about getting open quickly in the passing game so that offensive linemen don't have to hold their blocks as long, so that your quarterback doesn't get hit. That's what has allowed Tom Brady to survive. I started this by talking about, okay, how did the Kansas City Chiefs win the Super Bowl? Well, the first way the Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl, the first way that Andy Reid finally got his first Super Bowl win, I covered him his entire career in Philadelphia, is Gronkowski retired. If Gronkowski doesn't retire, the Patriots offense looks completely different. And the Patriots go 12-4, and they probably beat Tennessee, and they probably advance in the AFC playoffs. Without Gronk on the field, that made life very difficult for Brady. He didn't have a guy who was getting open on option routes between the hash marks, and he couldn't get rid of the football. That's why he led the NFL in intentional grounding last year. He led it. Tom Brady.
Wow. All right. Good stuff, Sal. We appreciate it. You broke down a lot. We really look forward to watching you on Thursday night to bring some normalcy to us and everything that's going on, and for the kind words, certainly for me and my family. So thanks as always, and we'll talk to you not so far down the road, my friend.
Thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. That, of course, is Sal Powell, who does just a terrific job covering these teams. And he's going to be heavily involved in our draft coverage on Thursday night. He's covering the Giants, the Jets, the Ravens, and the Philadelphia Eagles. All right, let's bring him in. Mike Tannenbaum joins us here, 98.7 ESPN. Mike, we know you're involved in the draft. We know you've been involved in running war rooms, so we certainly look forward to what you have to say today. Let me start with this. I can't imagine that they do, and I'm not asking from a Giants standpoint, but the Redskins, I guess, are fielding calls or at least just having conversations about the second overall selection. There's no way that you envision Washington trading out of two, right?
Yeah, that's right. But they wouldn't be doing their job, Dave, if they didn't at least, you know, entertain those calls. So barring something unforeseen, I would think that when it's all said and done, Chase Young will be a Redskin. I will say this, like, if you're looking at their team, I'm not so sure a pass rusher is their number one need. I just think he's too good of a player to pass up. So, I mean, if they got some sort of, you know, inconceivable offer, I think they would have to entertain it. But I just don't see that manifesting itself.
Mike T, at this point, are you trying everything and anything? Like, if you're Dave Gettleman, I mean, are you trying whatever you can? Like, the fact that, you know, the report comes out that the Giants have, you know, done, you know, all this work on Justin Herbert. Are you trying to get things out that will allow you to do what you want in the draft, like Giants trying to trade back from four?
Yeah, and I know Dave pretty well. Rick, I think he's a what-you-see-is-what-you-get guy, and I'm sure he was doing his homework on Justin Herbert because he felt like that was the right thing to do. I do think strategically, and guys, we've talked about this before, like, my gosh, it lines up perfectly for these guys to trade back. So, you know, for you, Dave, and the other Giant fans listening, I think that's an absolute no-brainer to do that. Now, what happens, you know, we'll see, but it can't hurt for them to know, for other teams to think that they could be entertaining Herbert. I just don't think, after all he's been through, weathering the Daniel Jones storm, that he would even entertain that at the end of the day.
Mike T, it feels like in every first round we're in for a big surprise, a big shock. I know a lot of the talk has been about teams in the top 10 trying to trade back, but do you have a team in mind that's outside of the top 10 that would be looking to move up?
Boy, that's really interesting. You know, I think the player would be Tua. And I'll tell you this, I think there's a chance he falls. And the reason I say that is, look, I think he has a chance to have a good career. I really do. With that said, I think people in the media, generally speaking, are minimizing this whole notion like, well, you know, the tests look good. Again, you know, you guys are world-class at what you do. You have a process each and every day to put on a really good show. And if the most important show of your career was going to be listened by your boss and your boss's bosses, and they wouldn't let you go through your normal preparation process, like, you wouldn't do that. And we're minimizing the fact that we're asking general managers who have worked so hard to get to these, to the pinnacle of their profession, to literally to skip all these steps and not be able to examine a player. I think we're minimizing the impact of that.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. I obviously want to focus on the draft, but trades are part of that as well. Jamal Adams has been a name that's come up a lot, certainly a local, you know, star player. Do you think that the Jets move on from Jamal Adams come Thursday night?
I really hope not. Yeah, I really hope not for their sake. I just, you know, I learned a long time ago in this business from Coach Parcells that he had a very simple definition of greatness. It's when you have attributes you can't see and you make others around you better. And Jamal Adams, he was a pain in the ass. I hated playing against him. Every play, you want to know where he was. And look, I know his game isn't perfect, you know, like from a center field standpoint, and he's better close to the line of scrimmage. But I'll tell you this, he creates energy. And sometimes you have to take a half a step back and say, look, you know, if we were starting from day one, would we acquire this player where he was picked? And is he worth, you know, X amount of the salary cap? I would just say, like, he makes the rest of the salary cap that much more efficient because he makes the program better.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. Mike T, with how this draft is going to run this year with the, you know, virtual draft and not having everyone in the same room, I mean, if you're one of these GMs, are you trying to get all your contingencies, all your, you know, potential, you know, draft day trades done the night before or maybe the afternoon before the draft?
Absolutely. And to the teams that I've talked to, they're all saying that, in the top 10 especially. I think the trades that we see will be prepackaged. And again, just sitting in that seat, Rick, my concern would be, you know, hey, I got an agreement in principle with Chris, but I got to run that by Dave and Rick, and Dave and Rick may not be on the same page, and I got to go back to Chris, and you may have 15 seconds. And when you're dealing with a head coach and owner and another team and call the league office, I just think to the extent that it's possible, we'll see those deals agreed to ahead of time.
Mike T, you got a couple veteran players that are disgruntled with their teams, Trent Williams and Yannick Ngakoue. Any chance that you see either one of those guys being moved during the draft this weekend?
I do, and I saw what Yannick Ngakoue did. I was disappointed. You know, I would certainly have gone to him earlier and said, hey, look, if you don't want to be here, we could have that conversation and work collaboratively. By you saying what you said publicly is not going to help you. It's not going to help you get the most money you want to get, and it's certainly not going to help us get the most value that we want as well. So if we want to work collaboratively and talk about a productive exit for everybody, we can have that conversation. But what you did is not helping.
Mike Tannenbaum joining us here, 98.7 ESPN. When we look at the Jets, here's a question that Chris posed earlier, so let me pose it to you. You're bored, right? You have your top offensive lineman. Do you take your third offensive lineman, offensive tackle at 11 overall, or do you take the top wide receiver on your board, if it's you?
I think it's the offensive lineman, and I think the Cleveland Browns are the most recent example of why we're doing that, Dave, because you could put the U.S. Olympic track team out on the perimeter, which, by the way, Henry Ruggs probably could qualify for, and if Sam Darnold's on his back, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. And I go back to my first draft with the Jets when I was GM, and it was 06, and I just remember saying that, look, we cannot block Richard Seymour. We can't block Jason Taylor. So I don't care if we could draft John Elway. If we can't block these guys, nothing matters. Zero. Nothing. All the time we put in schemes, practices, it doesn't matter. We're not big enough, strong enough, tough enough, physical enough. So until we solve this, fellas, nothing matters. And we got lucky. You know, we had two offensive linemen in DeBrickashaw Ferguson and Nick Mangold fall to us, and at 4 at 29, respectfully. And that was the foundation for a lot of wins for a lot of years for us. So I get the fact that there are some explosive playmakers that could really make highlight plays, but unless you could block them, it doesn't matter.
Mike T, this time of year, I mean, we're a couple days away from the draft. How hard is it for you as the GM to kind of sift through all the garbage, all the smoke screens that, you know, your fellow GMs and these teams are throwing out?
You know, when you have one of these jobs, and I'm probably talking to Joe Douglas and Dave Gettleman today right now, every day when you're running an NFL team in New York, you're sitting behind your desk and you got a big fire hose, and there's going to be about four or five of those suckers every day. And this time of year, it's just trying to sift through what you should do. And, you know, everyone has their opinion, and you just got to do what you feel is best and not worry about all the other noise. And it's hard, you know, because everyone's telling you, like, this is going to happen or that's going to happen. And nobody knows. I mean, I was part of something, you know, 3 years ago, that was history. You know, Laramie Tunsil was the number one guy on our board in Miami, and we got him at 13 because one of the most bizarre set of circumstances happened. And I promise you guys, when we're on the phone next Tuesday, the four of us will be like, I can't believe X happened. You know, things are just set up this year, and just talking to enough teams to know that people are all over the place in how they assess players, especially this year.
Mike T, it was reported earlier this week that Joe Burrow reached out to Peyton Manning to get some insight on being the first overall pick. What does it say to you about Joe Burrow, the fact that he would do that?
You know, Chris, I love that. I think one of the things that is an indice of success, regardless of your chosen field of profession, is a growth mindset. You know, typically there's growth in fixed mindsets, and the more that you could be open-minded, ask great questions, and learn really bodes well. So I hope Joe Burrow not only does it today, but he does it in year 20. And that's how you get better. So I think it says a lot about him.
Obviously, we know that New England has moved on from Tom Brady. Do you think they get their quarterback of the future in this coming draft?
Possibly. But one thing that's interesting to me, Dave, is I think this is a very underreported transaction, which is if we go back to Labor Day of 2019, the Patriots, on what they presume to be a championship-caliber football team, cut Brian Hoyer. So to the extent that they believed in Jarrett Stidham then as an unheralded fourth-round pick from Auburn, I got to think that they only feel better about him today. So I think at the right time they could. I always felt like Andy Dalton made a ton of sense in New England, but let's not underestimate the fact that he was one hit away from playing last year.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. Mike T, you mentioned Laramie Tunsil and the gas mask and everything else. So one of the top-rated offensive linemen, Mekhi Becton, red flagged at the combine, which is ridiculous that would actually happen. But how would something like that affect how you felt about the player?
I think the big question on that, Rick, is really it comes down to is it a bump in the road or is this a pattern? So if they have academic issues, if they had missed assignments, if they missed practice a lot, if they were hard to coach, it would be pretty significant. If it was somebody that had a flawless background and, you know, was doing something at the wrong time and got caught, you probably look the other way. So, you know, it was always funny working with Rex. You know, Rex said that, you know, anytime a player would test positive, if they were a good pass rusher, it was secondhand smoke.
Mike T, yesterday Dave Gettleman on a Giants-produced pre-draft program said that when you're picking that high in the draft, you got to try to find a guy that can wear a gold jacket at the end of his career. I guess my question would be this. Number one, should that be the standard if you're drafting within the top five? And two, does that mean that Dave Gettleman is going after an Isaiah Simmons versus going after one of the offensive linemen?
Yeah, you know, I probably see that one a little bit differently. You know, I've been fortunate enough to be part of a group that, again, drafted Darrell Revis and a few others that should be or could be in the Hall of Fame. And I just think those are high standards. I think, like, hey, let's get a really good football player that can help us dramatically right away, that's good, a good player and good character. And whether or not he wears a gold jacket is something that's 20 years down the road. So Isaiah Simmons is fascinating to me because if you're a defensive coordinator, you can have so much fun and where he lines up and what he can do. I think the challenge they have is they have so many holes that they may not be able to take the best player. And if I was them, I would take a long look at Simmons, but knowing that a left tackle would probably make Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley that much better. And I think that's probably the real conundrum that they're discussing.
All right, so if you go left tackle then, you're going Wills, you're going Wirfs, you're going Becton, you're going Thomas. Which of those four? I think you've told us in the past that you like Thomas the best. Does that still stand true?
Yeah, and ironically, you know, I see a lot of DeBrickishaw Ferguson in his game, meaning he's smooth, he's athletic, he's not the most powerful guy in the world, but he played at a high level in the SEC. You never see, I shouldn't say never, hardly ever get beat off the edge. I just watched two more games this morning against LSU and Florida, so he's going against pass rushers like Grenard and Chason from LSU. Like, he has the feet, the length. I think he's a really, really high-floor guy. Again, do I think he finishes great? Not all the time, but I think you put him in at left tackle for 10 years and never worry about that position, and there's a lot of value in that, guys.
Mike T, if you're the Miami Dolphins, you got the three first-round picks. Do you feel like they have to come away with a quarterback in one of those picks?
Well, I'll tell you this. I think the way Ryan Fitzpatrick played for them last year takes a little of the pressure off. That what they do will be interesting. I think, obviously, things got more complicated because of the Tua situation. And, unfortunately, you know, the pandemic that we're all obviously collectively dealing with. So I think it's likely that they take one. But I think Fitzpatrick played well enough for them. You know, you got to give him credit. He went to Foxborough last year and won a game on the road. So I think it's likely they take one, but not certain.
Mike T, how many quarterbacks are going to come off the board in the first round this year?
I think someone comes up for Love at the bottom of the first, so at least four, in my opinion. You know, Burrow, Herbert, Tua, and then I would say Love. And I think someone, ironically, like maybe Green Bay. Green Bay has spread opportunistically. They draft Aaron Rodgers, and the rest is history. And I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, a team like Green Bay or Pittsburgh doesn't have a one right now, but a team like that that's solidified with a quarterback says, you know, this is too good of an opportunity. And I'll share one other interesting thought. Look, none of us really know, like, what the world, let alone will be in the fall. But to the extent that we play football, I have heard a theory out there that having the best quarterback roster possible is even more important this year, because what happens if, you know, we're in week three or four and your starting quarterback gets the virus? So I think that's a little bit of a nuance that's out there as well.
Mike, you play David Fales, Mike. We lived that last year with mono.
Yeah, I did the same thing the year before, so been there, done that.
Mike, last one from me. You ever finish a draft, go home, and just be like, boy, I don't like this at all. I just don't think we had a good draft.
Well, there is an epic story between my wife and I. We had a brand new white carpet in our master bedroom. And it was the Saturday night. And it was the old, you know, rounds 1 through 3 and then 4 through 7. And I hated what we did in the third round. And I poured like a bottle of red wine almost to the top. Boy, and I was pacing back and forth, just MFing everything and everyone. And she didn't hear one word, but she looked at me like a tennis match, just looking for that first drop to fall on the white rug, which thank God it didn't. So I certainly have had those moments for sure.
It's good stuff. Rick, you have another one, or are we done here?
No, I'm good. I'm glad to see that Mike T's a big red wine guy. My man.
That's right. All right, Mike, listen, have a great call the draft on Thursday night. We will talk to you next week, and we look forward to it greatly.
Great, guys. Really appreciate it. And, looking forward to speaking next Tuesday to do a recap.
Yep, the big recap next Tuesday. That, of course, is Mike Tenenbaum. So good stuff from there. Walking around, just perilously walking around with red wine. Living on the edge there. I love that.
Living on the edge, big glass of red wine, MF and everybody.
That's right.
Nice.
Didn't
He's
like
human.
Did in the third round.
Made a mistake in the third round.
We got to scout his picks and see which guy, in fact, that was.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.